Today's program was brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, host of Full Service Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this show, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue.
You're listening to Word of Mouth with Leyte Sue on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Leyte. When I'm not on the air, my job is to eat and drink and connect people. I'm out and abouting, having the very conversations that you hear here, and working with my clients, which include chefs, restaurateurs, big brands, startups, those doing what's most innovative and delicious. Today, we'll have live in studio Chef Mads Rusland, co-founder of Copenhagen's Noma, some say the world's best restaurant, and now head chef at Acme in NoHo, New York City. We'll talk his cookbook in the works on trash cooking, and also in the works, a new tasting menu fine dining restaurant. Plus, breaking up with bestie Rene Redzepi, working with prisoners, cooking with dad, commune living, cancer, and pizza. But first, Chef Eric Boyard, formerly of 11 Madison Park and now head chef at La Compagnie de Vins Surnaturels, on his new dinner party collaboration called Dinner with Dignity from the Ground Up with Rachna Govani, founder of Food Stand. And with that, I'm so pleased to welcome People We Like. Chef Eric Boyard and activist, co-founder of Food Stand, Rachna Govani.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Welcome to Roberto's Pizza and Heritage Radio Network.
Thank you.
Delicious.
So this dinner party just happened, and it was kind of a unique gathering of people. I mean, I know it's so cool these days to talk about better for you food. It's almost like an episode out of Portlandia, but like, who came together and what happened at Dinner with Dignity?
So as a chef in New York, there's a lot of talk about where do we find good food and what communities are underserved and don't have that accessibility. So started to become really passionate about being able to figure out a way to open up a new secure dialogue for people in these impacted communities, different neighborhoods, different boroughs around New York, to really be heard from the ground up. So in my travels and cooking overseas, Spain, Italy, London, and then traveling to Southeast Asia, I've noticed a lot of similarity about family meals and the importance of food on an everyday basis. And it's just so lacking here in American culture. I don't know where the disconnect happened over the last few decades, but we need to bring that back and get people today excited about the food that their mothers and grandmothers cooked and those things that like ground culture back on the table to bring people together.
And how did you and Rachna meet?
I spoke on a panel at the Food Stand and we reconnected, and she so graciously put me in touch with a few other phenomenal leaders in the community. A woman named Beth Reed, who does amazing wellness programs for younger people around food in Brooklyn, and Karen Washington, who's a legend in the community up in the Bronx for 28 years, been urban farming, so ahead of her time, started a farmer's market up there 13 years ago, and she now runs a farm
an all-lady farm
upstate called Rise and Root Farm. I went and visited her and you know, picked some radishes out of the ground with her, and it was amazing. And she's so inspirational. She inspires everyone. And to have her and these other two ladies be leading this project with me was just mind-blowing.
Ladies, ladies, ladies.
A lot of ladies.
Surrounded
of ladies.
By ladies.
That's how Eric likes
just
it, right?
Just the way he likes it. Yes. And Rachna, tell me about Food Stand.
So Food Stand is a new startup, and it's a digital food community that really brings to life a lot of the issues that Eric was talking about around food and community and healthy eating. Our goal is to really democratize good eating, to make it not just for the privileged class or not just for the people who have time and money, but to really make sure people understand where to find it, what to do with it, how to enjoy good food. And I think this dinner was quite important to us because a lot of what we do is scalable digital community building, but this is the first time we had a chance to really talk to the folks who are actually leading the charge when it comes to bringing food culture back to this country and sort of re-Americanizing it into the fabric of everything we think about.
So how would I or somebody who wants to get more involved with a good food community get involved with Food Stand?
So you can go to thefoodstand.com and you can sign up. We're actually launching our app next week, so look out for that. And when you sign up there, we'll get you more information about how you can find good food in your neighborhood and how you can share if you found something amazing that more people need to know about.
Like the Instagram-ish for
good food. Yeah, a bit of like an Instagram meets Foursquare for healthy, local, sustainable food. Not judgy at all, just more fun and celebrating good food around you.
And not just restaurants, but also
home cooking. Exactly,
and
exactly.
Ingredients and
exactly.
Deliciousness.
If you want to find antibiotic-free chicken near you, we have an answer. If you want to share your kohlrabi for the 11th time, we want to see it.
So this dinner, who was present? Like, give me some examples of the folks that are really on the front lines of the movement.
So it was actually a really diverse community. I think the first thing is we had people from the ages of 14 years old to, I can't even remember the oldest person, but definitely in their 60s and retired. They were people from the different boroughs around New York City. You had people who were admittedly on food stamps, and you had people who were the leaders of the community gardening movement. So the folks from La Finca del Sol were there. Karen was there. We had a teacher there. We had people who were running the community centers there. So I think it was a great mix of people who experience the goods and the bads of our food system on a day-to-day basis and actually are champions within their own communities.
And the organizers invited specific people in
mind. Yeah.
So what were some learnings that came out of this conversation?
So I think one of the interesting things that I was surprised by was sort of just how heroic a lot of these people are in their day-to-day. So the 14-year-old girl, for example, lives in the Bronx, is a vegetarian at a school in the Bronx, and that's pretty hard to do. And she's like, in a lot of ways, the hope that some of the older people were looking to see in the room. And so for her, the challenge is not just like, well, where do I find my vegetarian meal today? But she's also experiencing people eating things like Twizzlers for breakfast around her every single day. And these are her friends. And I think those are some of the really interesting stories of just people who were sort of accidental heroes when we think about it as an external person kind of looking into what's happening on the ground.
How did she in particular get inspired to eat, you know, eat well?
She had a food allergy that made her think differently about meat consumption in general. It was sort of accidental again. Her father also runs a community garden, but is a voracious omnivore. Mm-hmm. But she fell into it and then realized that's something she was very passionate about. And the fact that somebody at that age can really kind of be inspired and then take the reins and run with it is pretty amazing.
Yeah, for me, it was pretty interesting because we didn't have any know of food allergies or constraints prior to the dinner. So it was kind of a, you know, no chef likes to know of a vegetarian last minute when it's a set menu, 7-course tasty menu, you know, everything was brought from Brooklyn to the Bronx, but kind of used it as a welcoming challenge. I was super inspired and she seemed super empowered that we were able to tweak things to serve her that dinner with dignity, just as much so as everyone else at the table. And her reaction was actually surprising how powerful she felt about the food that was being put on the table. And it was quite inspiring to see. Yeah.
Were there some folks at this dinner that wouldn't normally be going to La Compagnie and having some silly ass fine dining delicious food from Eric Boyard?
Yeah, I mean, plenty. And it was such a diverse group, which was the beauty of it. We literally created a micro community with these different people and these different status classes and just brought them together. And it was amazing how successfully simple, beautiful food that was sourced locally can bring people together to talk about dialogue.
What did you cook? One example of a dish.
It was all delicious, by the way.
I love your food.
Thank you so much. Yes. You've had a lot of it. But yeah, just showcasing. Of course, some of these things are not accessible, so it's kind of like an oxymoron. But
that's okay.
How do we get people excited about the food without presenting it to them for them to get excited about? So there has to be like showcasing such product in a beautiful and straightforward, approachable manner, but still bring out the best of what the product is, because ultimately that's how people are going to eventually shift their mindset about what they want in their community.
Mm-hmm. So what's an example of a dish?
I mean, we did a beef dish with beets, but we showcased beets in four different ways. We sautéed the tops, we pickled the stems, we roasted the root, right? And we made a puree, and that blew people's minds. Like, oh, not only are we not wasting any part of the product, but it's delicious, and it's subtle, and it's complex. There's all these different things you can get from one vegetable.
Yeah, one thing about the menu that we were a little apprehensive about was, is it not going to be accessible? Because, like, you don't have access to all these things in all these different communities. But because a lot of these, a lot of immigrant communities, in fact, are much more tied to cooking culture, they were actually very inspired and very connected to the techniques and to the multiple uses of the beets.
Yeah, my mom and my dad and me and my little sister, we don't do anything but eat. We don't do anything else
right.
Fun, really. That's it.
That's all you really need, though.
Yeah.
What's an example of a problem that was presented at the dinner table that has a solution that kind of comes from outside in that wasn't, mm-hmm. That didn't really work.
Yeah. And this is one of the stories from one of the community leaders in the Bronx. And, I think in the land of on-demand food, we hear a lot about different ways to get fresh food delivered to your door, whether it's Blue Apron, or it's cut up in Blue Apron and it's like kind of prepped or almost prepped or totally cooked. I think we've seen every version of it.
Yeah.
And so there were definitely attempts to do something similar in an underserved community. So what would it look like if you had a box delivered to your door with fresh produce?
Sounds like a brilliant idea.
Amazing, but
it actually
didn't work because the design of that type of service was not necessarily thought of as like, how do you actually make it work for a community that maybe isn't home at the time of delivery or isn't around to pick up the food where they need it to be picked up or can't order these things online. So I think a lot of the solutions that we would think of as sort of simple are actually much more complicated. And the beauty of the dinner was that we learned a lot more about what the challenges are. So as we collectively, as opposed to just in a silo, start thinking about solutions, we have that perspective.
So what would be like a better way to do the box thing?
I wish I knew, because I probably...
So we're starting out the conversation.
Yeah.
Now, how can people stay in touch with you guys online, offline, and what's the next step here?
So I think we're going to do another one, right, Eric?
We have to do
another one.
This is the people want,
People want to eat your food. The dialogue, forget about it. Another opportunity to go to Chef Eric's dinner.
It's the other way around. No, through Food Stand.
Yeah, so you can find us.
And we are super connected right now, mm-hmm. together. And through Rise and Root Farm.
Yep. So you can find us at thefoodstand.com and thefoodstand, all one word, on Instagram. And then you can also follow Eric for more information.
Your Twitter handle is Eric Bolyard.
Eric W. Bolyard.
B as in boy, O-L-Y-A-R-D.
Yes. Thank you so much, Rachna and Eric.
Thank you. This was fantastic.
So glad that they got to come on today, because we're going to be talking more trash cooking after this quick commercial break with Maz Reslan, co-founder of Noma and chef at Acme.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
You still paying attention? Are you there? Hello, 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 hello. I'm talking to you. Hi. Hey, this is Jack Inslee. I'm the executive producer here at Heritage Radio Network. I've been here at the station since 2009, and I cannot believe just how much this network has grown over that time. We've been able to grow because of donations from people like you. So if you're enjoying this, if you laughed, if you learned something, contribute anything. $1, $2, $10, $100, $1,000. Anything counts. And trust me, we'll appreciate seeing your name come through on the donations. So consider visiting heritageradionetwork.org. Click on that little beating heart, the donate button, and show us you care. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
Welcome back to Word of Mouth with Leyte Sue. And that was kind of freaky. It was like Jack was talking to me in that commercial directly. Hi, Jack. Yes, I will donate. I promise. If you love what you hear, do connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I'm at Leyte Sue, L-E-I-T-I-H-S-U. We're at Heritage_Radio. And indeed, we are a nonprofit food radio station based out of two shipping containers in the back of a pizza restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. So we do need your help. Any amount matters for us to be doing this kind of work. And if you're posting about word of mouth, please hashtag WOMSHOW, WOMSHOW, that's short for word of mouth, so that I can find your comments and your questions. And you can also hit subscribe and listen to the show anytime, anywhere through iTunes or Stitcher. As always, if you love what you hear, rate and review us. And if you hate it, you can keep that your own dirty little secret. And now for people we like.
People we like.
Mads Refslund, the co-founder of Noma and head chef at Acme. And he's also on to new projects, a new cookbook, and another restaurant. Hi, Mads.
Hello.
What are you laughing about?
I don't know. The voice of...
The angels.
Of the angels, yeah.
Welcoming my fabulous guests.
Yeah.
it's been really nice getting to know you lately, because I don't think I knew what to expect about you. Because Acme is just such a, it's a very funny destination. It's very glamorous. It's swarmed by
it's a
models
fun place, yeah.
And chic downtowners. And it's like, who is this Mads Refslund?
It's definitely different from what I used to do. So, you know, I've been there for 4 years, and I'm still very much alive there, and I love the place. It's been different from Denmark, where I come from, but it is a cool place.
When you landed in New York, you met the owner, Jean-Marc Homard, kind of
randomly,
right? Like, what happened?
So, I've told this story many times before, but actually I've never told it to the public, I think.
Oh,
but
lovely.
It's always between friends.
Yes.
But because it's a little bit embarrassing, actually. So, you know, my background from Denmark, I was involved with some restaurants and a point of my life, I had to close a restaurant, my child restaurant, my first real restaurant, MR. And then after that, I was traveling around the world and talk about Nordic cuisine. And it brought me to New York as the first time ever in the United States. So I did this food event called Omnivore Food Event.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always fun to hang out with these French guys. It's always a big party.
Luc de Bancher.
Yeah, it's really fun. So we did this event here, and I had 1 week vacation before I had to go to Washington, D.C. to do another show. And I went out for dinner and I didn't know the tip situation here in the city. So I got the bill. On the bill was written tax, and where I'm from in Europe, you don't have that on your bills. You just pay your tip, of course. But I thought this tax was the tip, so I left the restaurant without doing a tip. So the manager of the restaurant was running after me, and I said, hey, is everything okay? And I said, yes. So why did you not tip? And I got so embarrassing. You know, I was so red in my face. And I said, okay, of course. So how much are your tip? And he said, like, between 15 and 22%. So I give him, like, 30%. And because of my strong accent, he asked me where I'm from. I was saying, I'm from Denmark. And he said, oh, my wife is from Sweden, and you have the best restaurant in the world. And I never say anything, but the person I was with said, yeah, actually, he was the co-founder of Noma. And, you know, that guy got completely electric and said, oh, you know, one of the partners of this restaurant is opening up a new restaurant. Are you interested in doing something with us? And I said, no. No, I actually not, because I was about to open a vegetarian restaurant in Denmark. But somehow he got my number, and I met up with Jean-Marc the day after for brunch, and he completely seduced me to New York and convinced me to come back and do a tasting. And, yeah, and I fall in love with New York. And I fall in love with the scene of, you know, of Acme and the way we're cooking there.
All because of cultural misunderstanding.
Yeah, you know.
I love that.
It was, you know, it was really, really different to come to the city, you know.
So you had, as a kid, you had an interesting upbringing. You lived on an island for a time. You also lived in a commune.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your mom and dad and kind of what
you
it was
done,
like.
You've done all the researching, so you could tell more about me than I actually can tell about myself.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can.
But people didn't tune in to hear me talk for...
No, I know. But yeah, my mom and dad is very, you know, free-minded, very hippie family I'm coming from. It's flower power. Yeah, I don't know. I was growing up with my mom and dad, and they were never married, but they were together for like 10 years. And we moved to this small island called Samsø in Denmark, where we had troubled family living with us. People had problems, mostly drug problems. So we took care of them to get them out of the world that we're living in Copenhagen. And, you know, if you go to a small island, it's more difficult to get drugs and get all these things and go into trouble. So we were there for like, for some years, for 5 years almost, on this small island. And I learned a lot. It was like a...
You had foster family. You were like...
We were like a big, happy family in a way. It was like we were a lot... Every night we were sitting like around 15 to 20 people around the table and eating. And it was a guitar. And it was always like very... hippie, you know.
Are you still friends with like some of the kids of these families?
Or no, really? No. Okay. It was like I was so young. I was, you know, we left Samsø when I was 8 years old, so I was very young.
When your parents split up, you went ways with your dad, and your little sister went with
my
mom. So you cooked with your dad a lot.
Yeah, my dad was working at nighttime. He was working in a newspaper, so.
It was a logistics
only,
guy.
The only time we had really was like when he woke up in the afternoon, and between that and until he had to go to work at 10 o'clock in the evening, we had that time together. So we always cooked together.
And what did he do at the newspaper?
He was, I don't know what you call it in English, but he's the guy in charge of...
Logistics.
Yeah, logistics. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, that's important, because like, why is he working in the middle of the night? Well, he's making sure you get your
newspaper
comes on time.
He makes sure all the newspaper is coming out. Yeah, it comes out to the right places in Denmark.
So what would you cook?
Oh, we cooked so many different things, but it was, you know, always at last minute we came up with it, so it's always you have to use your imagination. But a big hit was pizzas, or it was pastas, or, you know... If we really have to do something crazy, it was always something with fish, you know. It was like, wow, that was difficult to cook. And today, you know, it's one of my, you know, I don't eat so much meat anymore, so it's what I love today, vegetables and fish. But at that time, we were cooking a lot of meat. I think that's what my dad was brought up with stews and heavy braised dishes.
So pizza was a favorite food group of yours as a kid, as it is with all of us in America.
So, I think the whole thing of making the dough from the scratch and come up with an idea what it have to be the topping, I think that was the creative thing. And just to get that, you know, that bread crisp, you know, it was like, it was difficult, especially if you didn't have a stone to bake it on. But later on, my dad bought it like a stone for the oven, and we baked it and it was crisp, and it was amazing. We invited all my friends over, and it was a competition of who could do the best pizza. And yeah, we stole the cigarettes from my dad when he fell asleep, and we're drinking on, you know, drinking some of his whiskey and all this. It was like really in secret. It was fun. It was.
And then you cooked pizza for your mom when you went to go hang out with her.
But my mom was a little more on the wild side. She was like more like she stayed in that hippie scene, and is still a hippie, you know, still flower power. And I cooked a pizza for her, and I think I was 11, 12 years old. And I cooked a pizza, and she fell in love with it. She really thought it was art, so she took one of the slices and framed it on the wall. And just left it there until it got moldy and fall down. It was green, and, you know, she was, I think I have a picture somewhere. I don't
really?
Know.
Yeah. That would be so amazing to dig up.
I'll post it on Instagram one day.
That would be hilarious. Wow. And when you had your restaurant MR in Copenhagen, which happened after you left Noma, your mom worked for you for...
Yeah, my mom worked for me for a while.
What did she do? What was her job?
See, you know, the best thing, your mom, you know, I don't trust so many people in my life, in my world. You know, and one you can trust is your family, of course. But a big thing for a restaurant is cleaning. Who is doing the best, cleaning of the restaurant? It will be your mom. But I think it was such a small restaurant. We had like only room for like 26, 28 people. And I was up and running, and then we got the Michelin star and all this. And suddenly, you know, my mom got diagnosed cancer. Mm-hmm. And they told her they only had between 2 and 10 years to live in. So she was living on another island called Bornholm. It's like the sunshine island in Denmark. and it's never sunshine there, but it doesn't matter. So she came back, and I think she thought it was better to be around her kids she didn't have so long to live in. And she started, you know, she didn't want to just not doing anything, so she started working with me. I think it was an excuse just to be with me. And every day when I came into work, she was there and had me coffee, and it was amazing, you know. And now it's like, I don't know, it's 14 years ago, like 12 years ago, she got diagnosed, and she's living amazing now. And yeah, I think, you know, just the will of want to live, you know, that can change a lot. And completely change your diet, how you eat. It's also changing some things.
Yeah, how did she change her life and her diet?
Yeah, I think, you know, she completely studied her illness. What should I do? You know, she completely was in control of what... Don't feed the cancer, you know. So she was stopping eating meat for a while. She was stopping eating all these animal fats, and become more vegetarian. And at the same time, she also became Buddhist, and she's really into it now. So I always thought she was so crazy, you know, the way she was cooking. It was always so wild, and there's no recipes, you know, just putting things together. There was like a lot of spices and a lot of craziness in her food. And today, I think she's the greatest, you know, it's amazing cooking. But that's actually what she did. She just continued doing what she was doing back in the old days and just don't eat meat. A lot of vegetable juices every day and a lot of exercising. Yoga every day. That's what she did.
Is your mom or dad a better cook?
I think if you go to the classic cuisine and I think my dad is that, you know, he knows how to make a sauce bernaise, and he knows how to roast a steak and all this. But my mom, she has no clue. She don't know how to make all these things. But she, you know, she, if you mix a dish, it can be absolutely amazing. But sometimes it's also really something you just want to pull out in the toilet, you know.
Like, yeah.
But that's the beauty of her.
She's the zany one. Your dad's the logistical guy.
Yes, I think so.
You know, it's nothing better than arriving and having everything all clean and fresh laundry and coffee.
No, she was, yeah, she was just amazing with that. And she was always pain in the ass, you know. She was like always coming over to me and telling me all about all these problems that was in the restaurant and how we should do it, and always trying to guide me the right direction. I was just, come on, I don't want to talk about this right now. You know, I had like cooking in my mind, you know. I was worried about, do we have no guests tonight and all these things, you know. I could not pay attention if it was like a something that had to be paint or something.
So one time you were on some television show teaching prisoners how to cook?
Oh yeah, that was much further. It was like 5 years ago after Emma.
What was that like?
It was crazy. It was it was really fun. Not fun, it was exciting in a way. It was like very thoughtful. You were thinking about your life one more time. So the whole idea, we went into a prison in Denmark, the hardest prison in Denmark we have, and we actually...
Yeah, what are like really hard Danish criminals like? Because, you know,
the same as America, yeah, of course. It's, you know, they're killing people.
I know, but
they're robbing banks and
nobody
drug deals.
Kills people in Denmark.
Of course they do.
I know, but you know what I mean? No, you can leave your baby
outside.
Everybody
believes that, yeah. But that's not the truth. We have crime in Denmark. But we went into this prison and we created a chef school where all the knives were, well, in chains to the wall. So when you have to cut a tomato, you have to stand next to the wall and cut the tomatoes. So it was a little bit difficult, but we actually managed to get around that. And every day, so we took the chains away and just a metal detector every day. And it was only one time a small knife, like a paring knife, was missing, and we found it in the garbage. So, but actually what we did, we were teaching these inmates to cook. And it turned out to a big dinner, like a gala dinner in the end. When the Prime Minister and all these from Denmark came, and it was very, very exciting. And it just, you know, it's just to give knowledge to somebody else is just amazing feeling. And give these guys a second chance, it was just amazing.
What's the show called?
Oh, I don't remember what it was called. Cooks Behind Bars or something, I don't remember.
Okay.
I don't know what it was.
Okay, that's clever.
I don't think you can find it anymore. It was like
really?
A
I really want to get this
I
on
maybe
YouTube.
Can find it like a secret link somewhere. I don't know.
It is. It was kind of like a reality TV show, right? Or more of a documentary?
More documentary, and okay. It was like 8 series. It was like 8.
So was there like, did you have like a teacher's pet? I don't, a best student, someone who is...
No. I don't.
Not
know.
Really.
There's always somebody who's good at something, but I think everybody was amazing.
You wouldn't try to grab anybody from behind bars and go work with you or anything?
Actually, yes. You know, there was a lot of them that was getting jobs around, you know, the city after people I knew. Yeah. So it was really beautiful, you know, and some of them I still talk to today. So.
Oh.
And, you know, it was not only killers and all this. It was also guys who was like trying to trick the system in a way and earn some money with, you know. You don't have to be a bad guy just to be in jail sometimes.
How did you meet Renee?
At chef school.
So what was the first moment that you guys laid eyes on each other?
Oh, my God.
You know, we're talking bromance. I mean, you guys...
I don't remember. I remember we were sitting in the classroom and we had to pay some money to get a locker room to our clothes. And he didn't have any cash on him. And I just borrowed him some money, and I think he thought it was very sweet of me in a way.
Aww.
We have never met each other before, and that we just clicked immediately. And you know, he was a good guy, and he's still a good guy. But I think we just bonded, and we became very, very, very good friends immediately.
So it's very, very strange and unusual to be called the co-founder of a restaurant. You know, that's not usually a term that's, you know, you're usually the chef or you're usually the owner, blah, blah, blah. So how did that all happen? How did Noma even get birthed?
Oh, so I was a head chef at a place called The Pole, and it was a very good restaurant at the time. And The Pole is actually a guy called Paul, Paul Cunningham. And there's a guy called Klaus Meyer who got this location what Noma was in. And
he's like a restaurateur. He's a culinary businessman or
yes,
something.
Yes. And he wanted to find a chef who could do this restaurant with him. And he was asking some chefs, different chefs, and these chefs was one of them was Paul. And Paul just opened up Noma. Mm-hmm. The Pole. And he recommended René. And he couldn't recommend me because I was working for him as a head chef. And René was... what Paul didn't think about was, like, I was best friend with René. And when René got the job offered, he said, okay, I'll do the job, but I want my best friend with me. And it was me. Yeah. Lucky me.
So you two have differing styles in the kitchen, or there were too many cooks in the kitchen.
We were best friends, and we've been living together that, you know, for a couple of years. But we just we have never worked together in the kitchen.
So, well, how are your styles different? What didn't jive? Or
at that time of our life, we were just different personalities in the kitchen. It was like that, you know. And
but how though?
I don't know how. It's just a way of. I was a little bit milder in a way. I think I was like not so military in the kitchen, and you know, René was just different and was like run the kitchen differently than me, and you know, just sometimes there's too many chefs in the kitchen.
In a way, you guys would have both been like co-head chefs, right?
Or yeah, and there's different ways you could do that. It's like either you want to, you have to split up the power in the restaurant, you know, in a way. You have to, one of them have to be more front of the house or something, I believe in that, and the other one have to be more in the kitchen, or you can also be in the kitchen and divide the kitchen on two parts. But it never happened. I was not there so long, so it just never happened.
How did you two, what was the conversation you had to have with each other? You know, what was the moment you knew that?
It was heartbreaking because we had that dream together. We had that dream of doing something amazing together. I don't know, maybe also at that time in my life I was 25 years old, you know. It was my first real restaurant I had a part of, and you know.
Are you guys differently aged?
I'm 6 months older than René.
Okay.
Nobody thinks that, but I am. Yeah, I don't know. We're sitting down and then we're crying, both of us, and hold each other and say, yeah, this is how it is. And today we're still very good friends.
European men.
Yeah.
I love it.
With a lot of hair on our chest, you know? You know, real men cry. That's how
absolutely.
It is.
I cried yesterday night. I did, yeah.
But you're not a man.
With no hair on my chest, trust okay. me. So, you know, you've gone on to do so many, your own restaurant, just so many super meaningful projects, and then Noma has gained that world, you know, world renown. And I'm sure you get asked this all the time, but like, is it slightly hard? Is it even 2% hard to not be a part of that? Like, you know?
No, not at all. It's you know, it's René. You know, Noma now is René. Yeah, I was in the beginning and I put some stones into the wall of Noma, but René have formed Noma as it is today.
No, it's very him.
It's him. There's no doubt about it.
Okay.
I cannot take any glory of that. You know, it's René is the man of Noma. and he made Nomad what it is today. I was very proud of being president of the beginning, and then and worked with René. It was very intense and inspiring, very inspiring, and also because he was not only because he was my friend, but also just as a cook, you know, he was really inspired. But I also think he would say the same thing about me. But you know, I'm not regretting anything, and who knows? I don't know. You know, if I was staying with at Noma, who knows if it would become what it was today is today. Probably not. Yeah. But something else.
And you guys might not be friends anymore. You know, that's a tough
thing. I don't know. You know, yeah, I don't know. I doubt that. I think friendship is, it's deep. You know, it's, if you're real friends, there have to be a lot to destroy that.
So very excitingly, you're having another shot at a restaurant that is completely yours.
Yeah, not right now. I cannot really confirm anything because there's nothing real solid yet. But I'm planning some things in the future, yeah. But right now I'm really focused about the book I'm doing.
Okay. But you don't have a location yet?
I have some in mind, but okay. not anything concrete yet.
Okay. And you can't even talk about what you have in mind for the concept?
I have ideas for concept, and I believe that... the future of cooking for me is more going back in time, cooking with how we were cooking many, many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Also because you have to go back to the roots of what this world is, you know. We have to have more pure products, and we have to be careful about how much pollution we're putting into what we eat. We become what we eat. So I believe go back in time and be more... eat with the nature.
Cook
over wood fire, using ice, using a lot of these natural things. I cannot say so much more because it's not really concrete yet,
mm-hmm.
but that's my dream.
In New York?
Yeah, in New York. I have to be in New York for a while. You know, I have been here for 4 years and I'm not ready to leave yet. And, you know, there's also so many things going on at Acme, so it's... You know, it's exciting what is happening right now. We just, you know, launched a fall menu, and it's all the game season is just starting.
Ooh.
Now. It's amazing. There's so many crazy things going on right now. New dishes coming up.
I'm coming back in. So the book, mm-hmm. Trash Cooking. How's it going?
Oh, stressful. Very stressful. It's so difficult to cook with the things you throw out. It is just really difficult, you know.
Delicious.
Yeah,
when you do it.
Of course, I want to cook something that's not delicious in my world, you know. But if you have to test one recipe, you know, and normally you throw it out, there's a reason why you're throwing it out. So let's just say you want to test, I don't know, fish gut. You know, you try it 100 times, and then before you find it right, you know, you have tried 100 times, and maybe one time will be okay. But it has to be delicious. So you have to try it one more 100 times, and then maybe it will be delicious. So you're actually using 200 hours or something on one recipe.
Because it's cooking with trash, it's hard.
You know, it's extra hard. It's really difficult, and there's a reason why everybody throws this out. But I really truly believe that there's so many things you're throwing out you can cook with and make it delicious. Really, really believe in it.
Mm.
Right now I have a lot of recipes and it's actually delicious.
Okay. So what's an example of one of those dishes?
Oh, we have celery core, this butter poached with sea bass liver that's like shaved very thinly. We have tartare with fish scales. We have blood sausages made with beet pulp. There's so many different things we are doing things with. Fish color, fish tails, fish eyeballs, pasta made out of juice pulp. There's so many different things we're doing.
When do you expect the book will be out?
I don't know. Okay. That's up to the publisher. You know, I know it really. I think sometime next year. I don't know exactly when it will come out.
I've got two last questions for you. Mm-hmm. One, you know, being very much at the forefront of new Nordic cuisine, and that's a whole nother, you know, way to talk local and sustainable and, you know, the flavors of right here, the terroir of right here. What is New York food to you?
New York food for me is, in the beginning, was really difficult. You know, you come here, and then I was, why my food was so strong in Denmark was because I used the best produce I could find. I had like really the best guy with asparagus in the right season, the right moment. And I knew where to buy it. So I came, you know, I come here like 4 years ago, and it was almost starting in kindergarten. It was so difficult because I didn't know where to buy all these things. And if I want to go to and get inspired by New York cuisine, nobody could really answer me the question, where can I get this? You know, the two easy guys that did that thing with the tin courses or what it was, and was like inspiration of New York, but it, truly New York food was difficult to find. But you, with all the months and years that it's been gone since I came here, it was like I've just been studying New York. And New York is a melting pot. Completely, it's a melting pot with a lot of exciting kitchens melted into one big pot. Where I'm getting inspired right now is, like, I think Dan Barber is doing an amazing job at Blue Hill Stone Buns. I think he's, like, the true, if you talk about New York cuisine in a way, it's where he finds the root of new New York cuisine in a way.
New York.
He's really using things that's native to here, and then everything's in seasons, and he's a really exciting person, a genius in my world. Like, I don't understand why he doesn't have 3 Michelin stars, you know, or he's on the top 10 list in the world top 50 list. I really don't understand it, because he's great. There's so many other restaurants in the city, you know. The sushi scene here in New York is absolutely amazing, you know.
Top notch.
I'm so inspired by that. The Asian food here, I'm, you know, if anybody's been to Acme, and you can see I'm inspired by, you know, my terroir now is all these different food culture in the city. And of course I'm also inspired by the land and upstate and Jersey and all, where all go, I get all the forest things from. There's so many things here that's not touched yet. There's so many things we don't use. And I don't know why we don't use it, but I think that people are getting more and more... I think that they're finding out right now that there's so many things here. The papaw fruits right now is in season, is amazing. Not so many people knows what it is, but the people who use them really, you know, can tell a story with it. The spice bushes right now, the sumac, you know, New York is covered with sumac everywhere, and nobody really uses it so much. But there's a lot of things here that's not used, and that's also very exciting for me. Maybe right now I think I'm in fourth grade or something, you know. I'm learning every day, and the day I don't learn, I will stop.
Speaking of, let's say you stop learning about cooking and food, and what would be your next dream job?
Oh. something with wine, maybe. I don't know. It's difficult. I have the passion still, and I dream about food. So when I go to bed, I'm dreaming about the next menu, you know, about the dish or something I've seen. So it's difficult to say.
Pretend. No food allowed.
So I maybe have to jump back in time and say, okay, what did I was dreaming about when I was a kid? I really want to be. I really want to tell stories. I really want to write stories. So.
A fiction writer.
Yeah, something like that, maybe.
Thank you so much, Mads.
You're welcome.
Mads Refslund, co-founder of Noma, chef at Acme here in New York. And at the top of the show, we had Rachna Govani of The Food Stand and Eric Bolliard, chef at La Compagnie in the Soho-ish area. This is Word of Mouth on Heritage Radio Network with me. I'm your host, Leyte. We're live 2 p.m. Eastern every Wednesday. Thank you to my wonderful sound engineer, Liz Smith, with us in the studio today. Until next time, eat well, be swell.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.